Wait, are you are you gonna count me in? Whatever, I'm just gonna go for it.
Welcome to the Queen's Lead Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Singleton. And as a child of the 80s, I'd love to say queens rule, but they don't. Queens lead. Being a queen means you are worthy to be a leader of people. The guests on our show do exactly that. They are leading the way in their businesses, families, and communities. And they're taking their rightful place in the spotlight, leading and inspiring the developing queens in all of us. Welcome to the Queens Lead Podcast.
Now here's your host, Amy Singleton, the queen of realness, leading conversations about business, life, and the real shit you want to know.
Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of the Queen's Lead Podcast. We've already been having a good conversation, so hopefully you're going to get part of this. Welcome to Connie Whitman from Changing the Sales Game. This is my girl from New Jersey. If you're watching the YouTube version, you're seeing her fabulous hair right now. I am so into it. Welcome, Connie.
Thanks, Amy, for having me. I'm so excited for our conversation today. We have a lot of energy we're bringing today. So let's, man, everybody hold on. We're going.
Hold on tight, because this bitch is about to let it pop off. I'm just telling you, we can already tell. Like, she's from New Jersey. I get accused, quote unquote. I think it's a compliment. Are you from back east? Like, call me a Yankee, man. I'm a fast talker. Kind of a ball buster, kind of a bitch. It's all right. Like, we are who we are, right?
I love it.
So tell us about yourself.
That's a big question.
Personally,
I could either be very interesting or very boring. you want me to talk about like just why I started my business? Is that a good place to start?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Okay, tell us like what were you doing before?
Yeah. Interesting because like everybody else, right? Well, for me, I graduated from college, got a job in my field, if you will, which is finance. And I was working for a credit company where we financed cars, right? Well, back in the 80s, I'm dating myself, but back in the 80s, leasing was this new thing. I got a job and they said, we want you to run the leasing department, teach the dealers how to do these leases, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, cool. So I was 20 something years old, right? I knew nothing. And they started sending deals in that were retail, which is the purchase, not a lease. Mm-hmm. And I would call the dealer up and say, hey, this is a business owner. And back then, business owners can write off the entire payment, the lease payment versus just mileage and stuff like that. That has changed, unfortunately. But back then it was great for business owners. So I would call the dealer up, the salesman, I'd say, listen, call Connie Whitman at Whitman Associates. Really, she should be in a lease, blah, blah, blah. And this is what they said to me. We don't know how to do the calculation. We didn't have computers. We had calculators. So I said, write this down. And I went through and I would teach them the calculation. Well, fast forward, I give that background because fast forward, what ended up happening, then I would say, call this business owner back, tell him to talk to his accountant. This is what you want to ask him. And I think he could write off the whole payment. So fast forward, they started bringing in more lease deals. So I'm going to say within 6 months, I was probably bringing in about 100 leases a week from 0 to 100. Think about that. And then all of a sudden, about 9 months in, a sales position to open at the credit company. So all these men are calling me and they're like, you're applying, right? I swear to God, Amy, this was my response. I don't know anything about sales. And they go, what do you think you've been teaching us? And I go, the calculation. And they were like, yeah, but do you know how much money we've made and how many referrals we're getting from the business owners? And the dealers dealership owners were in love with me because I created this whole other revenue stream for them. And I said, I did, right? Kid didn't know anything. So I go to my boss and I said, hey, listen, so we have the sales position. I think I'm good at sales. I'd like to, you know, throw my hat in the ring. Amy, he looked at me and he said, they'll never let me promote you because you're a girl. So here's the interest. And this is something that happened in the 80s, guys, right? And look at me. I'm a big girl. I've survived. But here's the important piece. And everybody listening, really hear this piece of it. So his name was Don, and he was just a really good guy. And he said to me, you've only been here, I think at the time it was maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years max. He said, you've outgrown us. He said, Connie, you have so much potential. You need to go out and spread your wings. He goes, so get your resume together. I'll help you. You can take time off to interview. I can't hold you back. And he had a daughter who was about 14 at the time. And he said to me, I hope someone pays it forward for my daughter because a company isn't allowing me to do something. So really, and it was funny because I was like, okay, whatever. And he was kind about it. So I was like, okay, whatever. But he saw something in me, Amy, that I didn't even realize I had. So that was a little bit of a confidence boost, which is kind of cool. And then I left, obviously. And I thought, well, I was going for my MBA at night in finance. So I went back and I got my Series 7 licenses, my insurance licenses, and I transitioned over to be a financial advisor. I did that for an insurance company and then got into banking. And then almost 23 years ago, merger mania downsized and I started my own business because I was good at teaching my people, my employees. By the time I left the bank, I had about 1,000 employees. I was teaching them how to have better communication with their clients without being pushy and icky. And I'm competitive. So my region was always number one. And they were like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm teaching my people how to communicate. That really, really, that's what sales is.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. For those of you watching on YouTube, here goes the crown. The very first queen leader moment. I mean, what incredible demonstration of leadership from the people you were with. I mean, kudos to Dawn, like probably dead by now, but thank you, Dawn, for seeing the value of a beautiful, talented woman in the 80s. That's so rare. Yeah. And kudos to you for taking that leap and going to do things on your own. Like, gee, I'm not doing sales. Imagine that. You're going, I'm just bringing value to people. I'm just making their lives better. I'm helping these business owners. That's not sales. Wait a minute.
Isn't that the kicker? So isn't that funny, Amy? Because now as I teach it, and you see, there's so many sales programs that are that hardcore, have a big ticket item, don't take no for an answer, and ask for referrals right out of the gate. To me, that's a very disrespectful way to approach. I believe in communication, education. So you empower people that they want to work with you because you make perfect sense when you share with them and ask the right questions. And there's a whole formula that I formulated over 40 years doing this. But it's about education at the core. So yeah, isn't that funny? It was intuitive for me. Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? Sales is not actually trying to convince someone to buy a thing, is it?
No, at all. No. Not in my world. Let me say, not in my world.
Yeah, for sure. Either by any, you know, what do you think it is that holds people back from that realization?
You know what I really think? Because one of the first things I do with my clients when I work with their teams is we talk about mindset. And no matter what organization I'm working with, they have to use some communication model. So and we have a free gift for everybody at the end, but some of my clients use DISC. I am DISC certified. So we could talk from that framework. I have several clients that use predictive index, which I love. I'm not certified in that, but I can talk to it and bring in the piece of it from a sales conversation. How do we leverage our predictive index, identify someone else's style, whatever formula you're using, and then how do we modify so that our messages land with clarity. But that we take into account. Once we understand why we communicate the way we communicate, people go, oh, that's why I'm a little shyer when I'm meeting someone new. And there's nothing wrong with that. But as soon as we understand where and why we're coming from that perspective, it's empowering. So we have to get into the mind a little bit and do a little bit of a mindset shift that sales isn't pushy. It's really education. Now you need to do it from your zone of genius. Like, don't try to talk like Connie Whitman, because I talk fast, I fire fast, I go big picture. You don't want to talk like me, especially if you're opposite of me, because it's not going to be authentic. And people are going to think, oh, they're trying to sell me something. Oh, they're being sleazy, because they know you're not being yourself. So the mindset is really important.
Absolutely. And also knowing, you know, someone said to me this week, like, why don't people just treat me the way I want to be treated? And it got me to thinking, like, well, I can promise you that not everybody wants to be treated that way I want to be treated. They don't, because I prefer quick, direct communication. There are a lot of women that require a little bit more nurturing and to know the feeling behind it and the why and the reason. And I'm like, okay, I want to know there's a problem with my hot water heater. How much is it going to be to fix it? And when can you do it? Like, that's, tell me your feedback on this one. because I am in action on the bank code.
Bank. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Bank code.
I'm disc. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, they're all.
I'm so the red. Good. Yeah. I'm the action. So yeah.
It starts with knowing where you are first and how you communicate and how you prefer to be communicated with.
That's right.
And then using that framework and that knowledge to sort of figure out how other people prefer to be communicated with.
That's right.
And isn't, so I've had it recommended to me to actually, you know, do things like set these cards down in front of someone before a meeting and say, hey, put these in order so that I know. But are there way, I mean, I've done that a few times. I find it to be a little awkward. You're like, hey, let's play a little game. You know, okay, well, maybe, maybe not. A little harder on Zoom calls, you know, but how is it that once we know our way of communicating, and like she said, she's going to give us a free tool so we can kind of figure that out at the end of this, but how can we infer or kind of try to figure out what other people, where other people are coming from without just directly asking them?
So like with bank and predictive index and DISC, I'll use those because they're most people understand them, right? I won't talk about my model, but so first thing I say is I have like a 4-step approach with that. So first look at the person in front of you on Zoom. You should be able to do this in 30 seconds when you get the flow of it, right? But the first thing is the person in front of you, do they talk fast? Do they move fast? Are they nodding their head? Are they animated? So they're more of a higher energy. Do they move fast or are they a slower paced person? So that's the first step. So in DISC, for instance, or bank, you could fill in the blanks for me with that. But if they're fast paced on DISC, they're going to be a D or an I. So in bank, they're either going to be the red, the action. And what's the other one that would be fast paced?
Yeah, it would be the like the knowledge, I think. Or blueprint.
Blueprint, maybe. Knowledge, I think, is more like a C on DISC. But anyway, so do they move fast or do they move slow? In DISC, you know, they're, you know, with the wheel of DISC, they're either the top, a DI, slower pace, they're going to be an SC. So right now you had 4 styles. You've just determined in 3 seconds that that whether they're up or down. So a DI or an ID or an SC, et cetera. Okay. Then the next thing I look at, if they're like you and I, we're animated and we're fast paced, we're like, hey, we're all excited to see each other. That's an I. We're friendly. People are important to us. Relationships matter to us. So then you lean to the I side. I'm fast, but I'm friendly. The flip side of that is I'm fast, but I'm like, all right, what are we doing today? Much more business, much more task driven. So that's how you can determine whether they're people. So fast pace, slow pace. Are they people or task driven? And that will, those two things will define what kind of styles in front of you. And here's the other thing, even if you don't have bank or you're not using DISC or you don't know what predictive index is, that's okay. Yeah. Are you fast paced and friendly or are you fast paced and task driven? No, that's your style. Okay. If you're slow paced and very friendly, you're an S. If you're slower paced and more analytical, you're going to be a C. So just know where you are and then know who to talk to. And can I give an example real quick?
Oh, yes, please do.
So I'm fast paced, big picture. And one of my private clients, he's an architect, right? Who I absolutely adore, is one of my favorite people in the world. Every time I meet with him or coach him, I have to get in his zone because I have to slow my energy down. Mm. And it's not that he's the problem. I have to think a lot because when I give him an example, he'll be like, but wait. And so I know not only do I give that example, but I go, but now let's break that example down and look at the repercussion. And I go into that detail with him. He needs that from me. That's how his information is received. I know this. So I just go in and I'm ready to dissect and get into the weeds with him. And it's funny when I shared my model with him, he said to me, are you being inauthentic? Which was, I thought, see, this is an architect. Am I being inauthentic because I'm modifying to the person that's in front of me? And I said, no, it's the opposite. To me, that's being respectful because you understand that human in front of you. It's not about us when we're selling. It's about our client, prospect, center of influence, right? If we're looking for referral partners, it's about them. It's not about us. So if I'm looking at that person and honoring who they are and how they communicate, the whole process goes so smoothly. And they appreciate and they feel that you are being authentic because you're taking the time to get to know them. So it's very interesting, people's perspective on this.
I love that. But oh man, that the one of the things that people can say that will tick me off the quickest is, that's just how she is. Or that's just how I am. Like, I'm just being authentic. I'm just being myself. Well, you know, like you said, I am a very high energy, like loud and, you know, animated person and friendly. But just like you, one of my very good friends, I have to absolutely bring myself down to her cadence and her tone. And it's out of absolute respect because I overwhelm people like
me
her,
too.
Right? Me too. I'm a really overwhelming person. I know I'm a lot. There are those people that are for me. But, you know, I used to think that the only kind of people I could do business with were people who were just like me, people like you who wanted to talk and be, you know, like really into the relationship and the big picture and stuff. But I'm learning, you know, as we all do in business, that changing my, like changing my tone and changing my behavior or my body language for a person is really serving them. Not a disservice to my authenticity.
Absolutely.
Love that so much.
And you know, what's interesting, once you teach this to people, like any team I come in, they, whatever their model is, but we have to start with that. Because if I don't understand me, how can I understand how somebody else communicates? So we really have to start and get in the weeds with that. And it was funny. I remember one class I was teaching coaching at one of my corporate clients. There's about maybe 18 people in the room. And this one person, I could just see their body language. They use DISC, they're high C, so very analytical. And I'm like, okay, get your things out, blah, 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 blah. And I'm setting up right for the day. And I saw them, just their whole body language got very flustered. Calmly walked over to them and I said, okay, let me help you, you know, set your desk so that you're ready and you'll know where everything is as I refer to different handouts. And so I slow and just gave them the time to do the thing and looked at me and said, oh, thank you so much. That's great. I'm good now. And I said, oh, great, great. And I turned around and someone on the other side said, how did you do that? So now what did I do? I don't know what I did. They said, you went from your DISC style to this really high C, which was the person. How did you do that? And I laughed. I said, oh, I didn't even realize I did that. That's what that person needed from me. Yeah. So you honor where people are. So that's just a quick example how you could get really good at this and shift within seconds to what that person needs from you. And that to me, like you said before, doesn't matter how I am. It really has to be about that client or prospect again, or the referral partner.
Yeah. But you really can't do that if you're all in your own head and you're not present and actually listening and paying attention to the person. And I don't think people do that intentionally. It's just their anxiety and they're thinking about themselves and they're worried about what they're going to say or what they're going to do. But when you can really sink into the moment and be present with the people you're with, it's so much more intuitive. Like you said, you just do it without even noticing.
The other thing too, another tip for that is when people are learning this, my rule of thumb, because humans, we have a 6-second attention span. So we're constantly checking in, checking out. Our brain has a lot of downtime, if you will. So we have a 6-second attention span. A goldfish aim has 7. So we're really in trouble, humans.
But anyway, we are.
We have the 6-second attention span. So if you can go really become a good active listener, trust me, you will not have to work any harder. Your calls will become higher quality. So you'll get a better close ratio on the back end because you're listening to really understand where they are. So it starts with the communication. But then here's my rule of thumb. You should be listening 70% of the time. So what does that 30% entail where I'm talking? It's my questions, my follow-up questions, and then when I present the solution at the end. That's the easiest part of the equation. Getting the right information from the client is the critical piece. So active listening is not having prepared, you should have prepared questions, don't get me wrong. You have your 8 questions that you typically use. When I ask Amy a question though, when you start answering, I'm thinking, now we're getting to the heart of it. I'll come up with 3 additional follow-up questions. I can't plan them because I have to be in the moment with you to hear what you're saying. Then I know where to dig and how to dig. I ask another question. Who's doing the talking? The client or the prospect? And now again, I'm gaining all of that information. So it really grounds us in that communication with the client because we're listening 70% of the time. And that's the only way we can really customize the solution for the client at the end.
Absolutely. Because, you know, just, I just, before this call, I was on a call with a prospect and asking those questions and asking things like, and what went good about that? And what went bad about that? And what did you like about that? And what was the success about that? And when I tunneled down, I discovered it really wasn't the product. It was the communication of the other company that they weren't getting what they needed. They weren't getting the attention that they needed. The deliverable was fine, but they were looking for another company because of the communication piece. You know, and so when we're all worried about speaking about features and benefits and all of these things that our widget has, that's not even the reason they're sitting in front of us, right? They need a different problem solved, and you can't get to that problem if you're always talking about your solution and not really hearing their problem, their real problem. And
so this, you 100% agree with that. Yeah. So here's the thing. I call it the pantry. Right. You know your assets, you know what your zone of genius is, you know all the programs you've created, you know what resources you have available or what books, whatever it is, right? So you know what's in your pantry. It's like when you go to cook dinner, you know, if you don't have rice, well, and you have noodles, you're not having rice, you're having noodles, right?
That's
so
right.
Know what's in your pantry. And then when you sit in front of the client, I believe every solution that you make should be customized to that person. So example would be, I have 20 programs probably I've created over the past 23 years. From that though, like if I'm talking to you and I think, oh, this is interesting. You need the communication from like my ESP program, but you also need the business development. So we could talk about some networking and LinkedIn profiling. I could pull them together and create 3 hours of training for you. That's what you need. But I know my assets, so I can pull and piece together and customize for that client. Most people don't. We have our program and we're selling our program. We're forcing the square peg in the round hole. Yes. And that's why we get, oh, let me think about it. I'm not really sure, because it's not a direct hit for what they're looking for or what the solution is for them. And here's the last piece of that little thought that I just shared, Aim. When you do that, a lot of times there's a lot going on for that client. You got to walk before you run. So you don't want to vomit on them. Well, you need this and this and this and this. It's like they're looking, going, I don't have the time or money to do this. This person's out of their mind. So instead you say, listen, you got a lot of moving parts. Budgets and time are real. This is the immediacy. This is the thing you need right here, right now. Let's do that. You have the budget for it. And then you and I, as we get to know each other, we can determine together, notice I become a planning partner, what that next step is. When is that next step? When do you have the budget? So we can plan all that. Let's start making money. And then you could spend money on these other things. So as soon as you do that, people go, oh, I feel so much better. That makes so much sense, because they're thinking about all the money and time they have to put in. Yeah. We're business owners. We can't do everything all the time. Yeah. So when you lay it out, you become a planning partner. People fall in love with you. They will never go anywhere else.
That's right. And you can set it up like, in your first stage, this is what we do. And your future casting for your relationship forward, right?
Yep.
Is that it? Yeah.
I love that future casting. I love that phraseology. Yeah.
So You, I mean, like, I almost missed this, but you said your framework. So you're not using a DISC or a PI or anything else. You have developed your own communication framework. So, would you like to share with us about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a colleague in Florida, and she was Myers-Briggs certified. She's in academia, was the dean of a school. And here I am, right? Business owner. And I was DISC certified. So we were talking one day, and I had just had a class, and someone came in and they were telling me, they were not an SC. They were just like me in ID. They were not. Okay. And I'm thinking, why are you deflecting? Own who you are. That doesn't mean you can't become more like me, or I could become more like you, but own your greatness right where you are. So I said to my colleague, they don't understand when they leave, what is an ID? What does that mean? You know, an EINJ in my, what does that mean? And my feeling is, if we don't understand something, we're never going to apply it and use it in real life. So she and I were talking one day, and we were just commiserating. And then we said, you know, there really are, we came up with 5 styles, like bank has 4, DISC has 4, combinations thereof, but we came up with 5. The other thing that we wanted to achieve is when the person left, and I'll just give you an example of one. So my heartfelt advocates, that's a very positive visualization for them. So people, instead of I'm an SC, but I want to be an ID, they are embracing the positivity of what their style is, because we all have superpowers. Why would you want to diss that and kind of ignore it? So they had to have positive phraseology. So the first time I spoke spoke about this. I was speaking at an event locally, about 500 people in the room. And I had given the link in advance that anybody that wants to take it in advance, my gift to you, there's no charge, whatever. And I'm going to talk about it. So people I had never met Amy. They're coming up to me. Oh, I'm a Heartfelt Amy kid. I'm an innovative organizer. And I was like, yes, you are. And I was like, because I didn't even teach him what it was. So I felt like my friend Marianne and I, my colleague, that we had hit upon something, because now they're understanding and embracing who they are. And then they can understand the other. Because again, the phraseology lets you picture who that person is or avatar in your head. And then you know how to modify. So I believe that we're visual learners, and that when we could hit things from different sensory perspectives, we could apply them much easily. We understand, and then we can go into application mode. So that was my model we came up with. So 20% of the time, or 2 out of 10 people, we're talking to people just like us. 8 out of 10 times, we're talking to people not like us. So there's a lot of room for growth and learning and understanding and respect and all these things that I think we as humans, we don't have tolerance. That's not a good thing. So I think all these models help us kind of breathe into ourselves, but then honor who's in front of us.
Wow. That's incredible. And so you just do it like with the assessment, and then
I was going to say they get 2 reports. So the scaling is from a positive 50 to a negative 50. So you'll fall somewhere in there. Obviously, the higher the intensity of your style, the more of that style, it's just natural for you. The flip side, though, if you have a very low negative score, they're probably the people where you're leaving money on the table because you're not making a sale, because you're only coming from your frame of reference and you're not modifying or flexing into theirs. So you get 2 reports. One spotlights your superpowers, your highest score. We need to know that because we want to leverage that and build on that and understand what are the blind sides of that superpower. So example, you and I, we fire fast, right? We're a combination of a stimulating motivator, innovative organizer. They're just the 2 titles. But what that means is when we're in go mode and we're goal mode and we're putting a program together and somebody gets in my way, be careful. You're in my way and you're going to know you're right. So we can leave. We have a team with us. We have to be mindful because my blind spot is I'm under stress. I'm going to be rude to people. That's not okay. So we want to understand our blind spots so that we can temper and say, I'm under pressure. I need Amy to do this. She's a precise assessor opposite of me. What does she need from me so I could still meet my deadline and get done what I need to get done? And then the flip side, you'll get a report for your lowest score. So for me, it's a combination of a precise assessor and observing designer. They're the researchers that go down the rabbit hole and don't come out. And the precise assessors give me more information. It's analysis paralysis. Mm. I'm the opposite of that. However, my architect, what do you think his 2 highest are? Observing designer, ability to research and understand, and then the precise assessor, because he cannot create a blueprint for a bridge that's going to collapse. He needs precision and perfection there.
Yeah.
So you see how understanding your blind spot, now you know how to communicate to that lowest style for yourself. And one last thing. Don't ever try. Like, I will never become a precise assessor, observing designer. It would be a painful process. I would hate every minute. So why do that? I have to understand it to slow my roll down, but I have people who do editing for me. I have people who do the research for me. I don't want to do that. That's not fun for me. And that's not going to move my business forward. I should be meeting people, doing videos, talking, creating content. That's my zone of genius. So it gives you a little bit of perspective with that as well.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so hard to it's so hard to put. I know I've taken so many of those tests, and like as you're answering the question, sometimes you're like, is this who I am or who I really want to
be? That's right.
Is that pretty common for most people with these kinds of assessments?
It is. And here's my recommendation. That's great that you're working on whatever, right? XYZ. Mm-hmm. But right here, right now, answer those questions with honesty, because it'll give you a better trajectory of what your strengths are naturally, that I'm on autopilot. But now what do I need to make sure? What are my blind spots? Can I learn that skill? Should I hire someone? And all of those, we start to answer the questions a lot quicker. And then we know where to spend our money as well as business owners, where we should allocate funds.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so good. I mean, and knowing yourself and being honest with yourself in that assessment is sometimes the hardest thing to do, but obviously there are benefits to it. Why do you think that, what was I going to say? Dang it, it fell out of my head. Why have communication skills become more critical to our sales success due to increased buyer's resistance?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because here's the thing with social media and all of the noise out there in our private lives, as well as our professional lives, right?
Yes.
What ends up happening is we get so distracted. So years ago, so example, 40 years ago, when I started, you know, in sales, a customer needed to hear from me maybe 3 to 5 times. And then they'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember you. Oh, yeah, I liked you. Okay, you made sense. I'll buy from you 3 to 5 yeah. times, right? To get that familiarity. Mm-hmm. Now, because of all the noise, it's social media and it's getting worse, by the way. Customers yeah. need to hear from us, touches, I call them touches, 15 to 18 times. Now, don't panic. That doesn't mean a phone call, you know, every other day yeah. to get to the 18. It could be yeah. a post that you did, an article you wrote. If I met you, Amy, and I know your zone of genius, I saw something about bank, I might forward it to you and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe we just recorded. I just saw this. I thought of you. I had to send it. Yeah. You would pause and say, oh, that was so nice of Connie to think of me to send that to me. So it's mm-hmm. not, hey, did you want to buy from me yet? It's just right? about showing off who you are, the love that you have to share, right? Your zone of genius, but you can do those little touches, but people need to hear from us 15 to 18 times. The other piece of the puzzle with buyer's resistance is movies like Wolf of Wall Street, you know, Madoff, I think it was called The Wizard. Robert De Niro, but it was about Madoff, who made off with people's money, right? Perfect name for that guy. All of these movies, we watch them and we think, oh yeah, they're all ripoffs. Anybody in sales, they're slimy. The snake oil salesman back in the olden days, right? In the 1800s, they'd blow into town, they sell their snake oil, and they'd blow out of town, right? All of that information is seated within us. So as soon as we know someone's going to go into their sales pitch, and I hate that word pitch, but that sales pitch, people literally, la, 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 la.
Close their eyes. Yeah.
What excuse am I going to give? Okay, I don't have the time. Okay, I don't have the money. So when we start to get those objections, in my world, there's 7 steps in my sales process. You messed up in one of the first 5 steps if people say, if give you objections. So again, it's listening, right? It's touching the people so you build the know, like, trust, showing up with the communication. There's so many moving parts. So here's the other piece of the puzzle for the listeners. Pick one thing and work on that for 30, 45 days. Kind of get comfortable, make it a habit. And then choose the next thing. So you just can't do everything at once, because then you think this sales is too hard. I can't do this. And then we get the negative record player. Maybe I shouldn't be in business. Maybe I shouldn't be selling. Maybe I should hire a salesperson. Don't go there, right? Develop your skill logically, piece by piece. And trust me, a year from now, you'll be locked and loaded for every conversation.
Oh man. Yeah. Step by step. You absolutely. And the only thing that helps is practice. Right? Practice. Doing it. Yes. You can't study your way to good sales. You have to put it into practice.
Yes.
What are some of the communication like filters or biases that maybe some of us have?
Yeah.
So that we're bringing our garbage that we're bringing with us from our past or our experience.
This is kind of cool. And I'll go through them briefly. I think there's 7. Hopefully I can remember all of them. First one is DISC, Myers-Briggs, bank, predictive index, whatever. We are born and wired. Our brains are wired a certain way, and we're going to die that way. So foundationally, you really should use, and whatever model your organization or that you have used in the past, just understand that what we've been talking about. So that's layer number one. Layer number two, men and women, we are from Mars and Venus. We talk and we perceive information. We literally filter information through our brain differently. So, and it's important because, you know, we're women, and I've been part of women's groups where, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. And I think that's very dangerous because I like being a badass woman, but I also know that dudes, they bring a perspective that I will never have. So if I don't filter their filter in with my information that I'm gathering, it could be very dangerous. So again, male and women, men and women, we do think differently. So that's the second filter. Third one, where you were raised. If you were raised on a farm versus an inner city, you're processing information very differently. Even if foundationally you're an introvert and I'm an extrovert, I was born in the city, you were born in on the farm, and you're fast paced, you're going to have a different energy. Even though I'm an introvert, I might be a little ruder because I grew up in the city. So you see that that will impact how we see the world. The next one is your heritage. Believe it or not, we are a product of our parental or how we were raised or the environment in the household that we were raised. You know, my dad was born in Italy, Amy. He came here when he was 20. I'm telling you, a lot of the way I live my life, a lot of the lessons, a lot of my values, they're from him and what he brought from Italy, not what I learned here in the United States. So your heritage, those traditions, honor them because they really are a part of who we are. And this is important. You know, I live in New Jersey, so the metropolitan area. I tease when I train, because usually when my groups that I train or teach, you have every ethnicity, many countries are present. English is usually a second language, right? And when at that around the holidays, I'll be like, so what's your favorite dessert that you make in your culture? And right. So I come with a very curious because I learned so much and so much richness from them. So instead of you're different than me, I don't like you, embrace, because here's the other thing, humans, guess what? We're really all the same. So how you were raised, those traditions and lessons you learned from mom and dad, whoever your caregiver was growing up, that's another one. The fifth one is a generation. We have five generations working side by side, first time in history. So we have young people that we need you to teach us technology. But guess what? You can learn a lot from us old timers because we have a lot of experience. We have a lot of exposure to different things. And then the last one is what you alluded to when we started this piece of the segment. Our ancestry. So they've done research on mice, Pavlov's theory, but then they took it to the next level. And they realized that we, through our DNA, we go back 14 generations with belief systems that probably aren't serving us any longer. So that's that mindset of I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I don't speak well enough, you know, with my English or whatever. And we go back to the deficiencies or the fears that our ancestors had, and we have them and they're very subconscious. So they rear their ugly head, but we don't even know they're rearing their ugly head because it's part of our, literally part of our DNA, our molecular system. So we have to understand that. So pay attention to how you respond to a situation and then kind of explore, why did I say that? Or why did I react so aggressively with that? And I guarantee it's something that happened to you as a child, or you heard your grandma or grandpa say something like that, or you see where I'm going with that. But 14 generations
in finance and not in therapy, or like, I mean, a lot of this really sounds like so much mindset work and so much, I mean, truly things I'm always constantly working on in therapy, you know, therapy with a therapist, these rewiring of our brain and of our, just of our lizard brains, really what I call it. We have lizard brains in there somewhere, really deep down, don't we?
Yes. And I could give if we have time, I could give a very tangible example of that. So I live in a beautiful town. I grew up in a beautiful town here in New Jersey, great school system, affluent, the whole thing. And I remember my husband and I, we're driving down one of the main roads and there was a brand new construction, had to be a 10,000 square foot house, Amy, ginormous. And you know, five car garage, the whole thing was ginormous. And in the front, there were little tykes, like a little slide, a little tyke slide. So I looked at my husband and I said, wonder what he does for a living. I bet he's a crook. And my husband, he's driving. He goes, wow, judge much. And in the meantime, I put my hands over my mouth. And I said, holy smokes, I don't even know these people. Like, how dare I? And here's what I realized. When I was a little girl, I grew up in Newark, here in inner city in New Jersey. And during the riots, we were coming home from the shore, and we call it the shore of the beach. In my world, it's the shore. But anyway, we're coming home, and we had to go a different way because of these riots. And I remember there was these beautiful homes up on a hill, and I was five. I said to my mom and dad, "Who lives in those houses?" In my head, they were princesses, right? My mom and dad at the same time, crooks live there. They have guns. They kill people. Evil people live there. You never, ever come on the street. So immediately, what did I associate? Big, beautiful house, crook. And yeah. I was five. And it came out when I did this. I'm 62 now. I was probably about 56 when that came out of my mouth. I had not realized I was holding that limiting belief that, oh, that's right. If you had money or you had a big house, you must be a crook. And I realized I was holding my business back. Because my fear was if people perceived me as successful, they're going to think I'm a crook. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Wow. But what a realization. I mean, I totally can identify with that. You know, like I was raised in the Bible Belt in Oklahoma, and money is the root of all evil, and money is bad, and people with money are bad. And if you've made it to this way, you must have done something wrong to get there.
That's right.
That's my limiting belief of growing up lower middle class and paycheck to paycheck and all of the things that I only knew from, you know, where I grew up. It absolutely. Right. And generations of, wow, unbelievable. Yeah. Holy crap.
We could do 10 hours just on that topic.
Right. Oh my gosh. Seriously. So there are some tools that we can use. And I think that's our assessment that you're giving us, right?
Yes. So in the show notes, you could put, I sent it to you. There's a link for the communication style assessment. You'll get the two reports to your inbox. And here's the thing, and I'm very transparent. You'll be on my email list, and I do send follow-up emails, and I give little tasks for you to do and play with and try. If you think it's the stupidest thing you've ever seen, you can unsubscribe. I don't feel bad.
Yeah. It's
okay. Do you?
Yeah. In fact, we don't mind when you unsubscribe from our list because it just frees up another slot for someone who is interested in our stuff.
That's exactly right. Okay. So yeah. That's right. Happy to share that with anybody. And seriously, if they have a question after taking it and reading the report, if they email me, I have quick write-ups that I do. Here's some of your superpowers, but be careful of this. I'm happy to do that. So my email is just Connie@changingthesalesgame.com. So my business is changingthesalesgame.com. Yeah.
And so you work with, really quick before we hop off, I want to make sure everybody knows, like, if they have a sales team or even just an individual person wants to work with you, you do work with teams and individuals, I'm assuming, via Zoom, or you are willing to travel to their location. Okay.
Yes.
And who's this best for, and how do they connect with you for that?
Sales teams and organizations, if they're trying to truly go in and build a culture, that just happens to be one of my zones of genius that, you know, you develop through the years. So if you have a team, you want to create a culture so that you're firing on all cylinders. Everybody understands we have the same language and you're delivering an exceptional level of customer service, right? So that is for teams, as well as developing the individual skill set for the teammate, the person.
Yeah.
Small business owners will hire me to work with them because, let's face it, when we're in business, sales isn't 100% of our job. So it might be 40%, right? It probably should be 40 to 50%. And they know they're leaving money on the table. They're doing okay, but they think, I think I could do better. And my objective is always, we don't work any harder. We really refine our processes so that you get more done and you make more sales without having to make more calls. So that, again, it's more for me, it's about quality versus quantity. So that's how I help business owners kind of figure out what their own communication model is for themselves and how to just make more sales.
That's so great. And so they can find all the information about that at changingthesalesgame.com.
Yeah.
Connect with you there.
Yeah,
connect with her on our socials. Everything's in the show notes. Yeah. So you guys go and check it out. Connie, what a fabulous conversation. I feel like I need to come to New Jersey right away. So we can go to the shore together and
we can go to the shore.
Shenanigans. Like, I'm here for some shenanigating with you.
The Jersey Shore. It's aimed. Jersey Shore would never be the same with the two of us.
I know. And by the way, did I totally miss? You said you are 62.
Oh yeah, I'm 62. I just turned 62 November of 2023. Yeah.
Queen, look at you go. You are gorgeous, beautiful. Oh, what gosh. Is your skincare routine? Oh my gosh. Do you have like a filter on your camera or what? Because you are beautiful.
Thank you so much for saying that. It's so funny.
Italian skin.
It's Italian because I use olive oil and I do drink a lot of water. I tell you for all my dudes and chicks out there, hydrate. It really does make a difference on your skin.
Nice. Well, there's a great tip for the day too. Improve your communication, improve your sales, and drink your water. If you want skin like Connie, hop over to the YouTube channel and check her out. She's absolutely
you are
beautiful
love.
Person.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for being my guest and for being a queen that leads.
Thank you. Love you.
The Queen's Lead podcast is recorded worldwide and produced by the kick-ass media team at the Hype Digital home base in Nicaragua. Until our next episode, stay real, queens, and go lead. Remember to tap that follow and leave your review. For freebies and more real, inspiring content you love, go to amysingleton.net and connect with Amy on our socials at @TheRealAmySingleton.
One more thing. This is the legal language, what my lawyer wrote and what I need to read to you. This podcast is presented for educational and entertainment purposes only. I am Amy Singleton, and I'm just your friend. Although I may speak to many on this show, I am not a psychotherapist, a business coach, a doctor, a CPA, a lawyer, or probably anyone who should be giving you professional advice. This podcast is not a substitute for a relationship with your doctor, coach, or any other licensed professional. Got it? Good. Now go be a queen and follow me at The Real Amy Singleton.